this looks really good.
Okay, guys.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Acquire the Fire, a podcast brought to you by...
Oh, me. You?
By the My House organization in the Mattsu Valley. Today, my guest is...
Melissa Starkey.
Melissa, what do you do here at the My House?
I've been a case manager here for a couple years now, I think. I don't even know. I didn't start out with My House. I started out with Nine Star, and then Roger recruited me, and I've been here ever since.
So Nine Star, what is that also a, what is that?
501c3. Yeah, it's where you help young adults, like, getting, like, their GED or high school diploma, putting them in internships. Like, Nine Star used to pay a lot of the wages for those interns.
Very nice. So you've been in this field or similar field. What brought you to want to help people?
I went to school, the University of North Dakota. I'm from Minnesota.
Oh, Minnesota.
Yeah, hey. Ofta. Make a heck of a hot dish. But yeah, I went for criminal justice and always kind of thought law school would be in my future. But I ended up meeting the coolest dude on the planet. Shout out Chad Starkey. And he was active duty Air Force, and we were, I mean, married and
in love.
Tense. Yes.
In love.
And then, I mean, way later, not way, way later, but later, like, had kids, and we were just overseas, and, like, we were in Turkey for a few years, and they really do not care if you, a woman has a degree. They don't really care about women in general. I mean, it's probably changed now a little bit, I hope. I don't know.
So you went to, your goal was to go to law school. You end up going overseas. You come back to Alaska.
No. We went to Guam.
Okay.
I just like to have babies all over the place.
Okay.
So I had one in Turkey, and then we went to Guam, and I had one there. So both those two had passports by the time they were 5 days old. And then my youngest, she's 9, and she still doesn't have a passport. She was born in Arkansas.
So you have your children, mm-hmm. bring them to Alaska. Did your Mr. Starkey get stationed up here in Anchorage?
He did. It was his bucket list. And it's so crazy because he's from Oklahoma, and we meet while I'm going to UND, the University of North Dakota, and he was complaining about how cold it was all the time. Mm-hmm. And then... he's like, bucket list, babe, we got to get to Alaska. And I'm like, I did my time. What are you doing to me? And he was just, yeah, he thinks we're never leaving. But, and I go back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, Alaska does have that way of kind of captivating you and playing tug of war on your heart.
It does. And I love the summertime. I feel like you go a million miles a minute and get so much accomplished. And then the wintertime, it's almost like you need that hibernation. And it's, like, all nice and cozy, but I do start to get, like, a little... Yes, and then when it's going to, like, all this rain, help me out. Help gal out.
For sure.
Yeah.
So we get stationed into Alaska, and mm-hmm. you have your degree in criminal justice, mm-hmm. and you're like, I want to do what with this?
I had quite a bit of exposure to, like, addiction and stuff like that with my dad growing up. With him was pretty awful. He was, like, really, really abusive to my mom and my brother, never me. I just, you know, like, had to be the one to watch it. So, I mean, is that abuse? Absolutely. But, yeah, like, yeah. You don't consider it like that, though, when you're younger.
The crossfire is just as painful.
Right.
It is painful.
Right. And then, so, we were out in the country. We were rural kids, which was awesome on snow days. But mm-hmm. when you have a... addict dad who would take pieces out of the car so we couldn't leave, and then, like, someone would be bloody or whatever, then it became not such a great place to live. So I knew being alone, like, I wasn't homeless by any means, but I knew feeling like somebody helped me, like, yeah, like, we gotta do something.
That's the thing that Sorry, side note. I realize that I say that's a big thing a lot, and I'm going to stop saying that in between. So to reiterate.
Huh?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Starkey's always teaching me new words because I always say them wrong. So we're going to talk about the crossfire of addiction. You made that point because it is really easy to think that as a recovering addict myself.
And a normie. Have you brought this up on the podcast before? Normies?
I have not. So for people that
don't. He teaches me things sometimes too.
So people that don't know what normie is someone who can drink without getting addicted. They can have a drink, put it down, and or someone who has never struggled with substance abuse. So from a recovering addict's point of view, I think when you're in that mindset of like, I'm only harming myself and that's fine. And I think we completely ignore the people that are caught in the crossfire of our addiction, like whether it's family, friends, like everyone's getting hurt and is catching that straight bullet due to our rough life. Not rough life. That's a weird word to use. Just our tomfoolery. We'll just call it tomfoolery. So you were caught into the crossfire of your father's addiction. Mm-hmm. And would you say that's kind of what motivated you to, okay, I didn't, or yeah. To finish the story, did you receive the help that you were kind
well, of so, wanting to get? It just was like, my mom was a saint, like seriously, like put me and my brother into therapy when we were stupid young. But it was also she was the only daughter, had five brothers. Divorce was not a thing, you know. And so it was like make it work type of situation. And so she tried to shield us from it, like, but it just was not possible. And she never did fully leave. Like, she had gone to college. Like, she was educated. She just, my dad was the one, he was a truck driver. He made all the money. And so I knew that I always wanted to be in a position where I had, if I ever had to leave, if I was ever in that position, like I was going to be able to do that myself and be okay. Like I never ever, like, so to me, I would have had every, no one, I don't think anybody would have blamed me if I decided to like not go to college. Cause yeah, I was like super alone. Like my mom died when I was 14, breast cancer. And so my brother and I, we were just like trying to figure it out. And he just super hard worker and bought a house when he was 18 years old and let me live in the basement. And yeah, we just both worked our butts off and we decided like make adjustments, not excuses, yes, and figure it out, you know, like, you know, the whole, so what, now what, you know, like it wasn't like, ugh, you know, like we were like, okay, what we have to figure it out. Like what's next, you know? Yeah. And so we just did that. And now it wasn't, I'm not like, oh, it was just like that, you know, yeah, like no. There's a lot that goes into that. But yeah, like we just, like we knew no one was going to do it for us, you know? So like, where does it stop? Where do you stop the cycle? Like, do you just let like those events that happened define you forever? Like it was like, it did, but not in the way that it could have, you know what I mean? Like it made us like better people. And I think more aware of other people who are struggling, like just more compassionate people. I don't know. Sometimes I'm awful.
My favorite thing about working alongside you and being able to see you work is you're a
go-getter.
Yeah, you're a real go-getter as well, though. Like you like to, like you can kind of like, sorry, Michelle, for cussing, but you can kind of cut through the bullshit and you're like,
yeah,
you're able to not bring yourself to a lower level, but you can be like, I can resonate. I know what life is. I've experienced it and I'm not going to allow you to cheat yourself.
Right. Okay. So when somebody comes to me and they're like, in their mind, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to anybody, who am I to tell them it isn't? It is the worst thing that has happened to them so far, right? So for them, the way that they react to that, that's a very real feeling they're feeling, you know, like, is something worse going to happen down the line?
Possible.
It's possible. Yeah, it's definitely possible. So let's, what do we have to work with? Let's figure that out. Like we know things went wrong. Like nobody walks through this door because everything is going so well. Let's figure out what we have to use and run with it.
Yeah. So we come to my house. We come in a state of like you said, we're not doing things right. Here's what I have. Let's make this happen. So on your day to day, what does that kind of look like for you when you are working as a case manager here at my house?
Whoever has to write this job description, like when we're hiring, I feel bad for, because you kind of name it and we're going to end up dealing with it. I honestly really enjoy like the triage part of it, because I do feel like showing somebody like we're going to do some paperwork, but we're going to have some good conversations and see where we want to be, see where we want this to go. How do we want this to look at the end of the day? Like, this is your worst moment, perhaps. Like, how do we get the end product to look like what you want it to, you know? So let's figure out what that is and let's do that together. Like, let's just have a conversation. Like, there's no going by the book. Yeah. And I never know. Like, sometimes you'll get people who come in the door and they're like, my dad said if I don't get a job, he's going to kick me out. And I'm like, okay. Like, we can do an intake, but I'm also going to tell you, you're going to have to get a job. You know, like, I'm big on school. You are going to get that high school diploma or that GED, because that piece of paper, I know it's just a piece of paper that says you can, but it shows that you will. Like, it shows that you're willing to get there. Yeah. And driver's licenses, I don't understand today. I know, they don't want to do it. Yeah. They don't want it. Anyway, like, but those are things I'll fight for. I will. I like, because it opens so many doors. So we may do that. We may be working on getting a GED. We may be, someone hasn't had a dentist appointment in 20 years. What is it that we can do to make you feel like you want to start making better choices? Like, if you look awful and you haven't taken a shower or been to the dentist or your mental health isn't where it needs to be, like, you don't really care about what the next steps are. So like, I'm going to kind of detail that, you know, work that out for you. And like, so I guess I am a little bit bossy when it comes, like, in the beginning. And then it's, and then you'll get a little bit more say in it. But like, I have no patience whatsoever. My husband would, I'll be like, wouldn't that wall look really good if we, like, a blue? And then I'm like looking at him like, why aren't you taping off the corners? Like, yes, like, let's go. I'm like, yeah, maybe I just need to, I don't know. But I think maybe it's a field where my impatience is helpful, because we don't get some of these clients for very long, you know? So like, just to be able to, even if that's all that happens, is you make a few doctor's appointments, get them in for therapy, get them the connections that they need to get their GED, you know, like, if that's all you have, like, you can feel really good that you gave them that information, you know? And what they do with it, like,
Michelle, she kind of is like, we don't take their successes or we don't take their failures. And if you watched the first episode, Michelle really dives into that really good. Because I think it's true. Like, we are in the business of, like, service. Like, we, like, kind of bring ourselves to their level and we're just like, we understand. We know what you're going through. Let us be a helping hand. And I like that my house slogan is, a hand up, not a handout.
Right.
Because a lot of us, like, for me personally, in my position, I've gone, like, through the stages of recovery, whether it's like, I've been through detox, I've gone through inpatient, I've done outpatient. I did my due diligence in staying in recovery, without working in the recovery field. And then I got brought into the recovery field. I was like, it opened my eyes to, like, I don't want to articulate this. It opened my eyes to, like, just like the stages of recovery, and I can relive those moments with them and walk with the clients through it. And it's just such a, a beautiful thing. It's like an all-time favorite part of my job is like getting down with them, doing the work with them, not for them, but with them.
Right.
And I can't take any rewards for their accomplishments, and I can't take their failures as like, oh, I messed up as a server.
Right.
Little tangent I wanted to go on. I don't know where it was going with
that. No, I know, but celebrating all the wins. Absolutely. Like, you will hear me almost every day, like, shouting out somebody because they did something that isn't, like, it's not necessary. It doesn't even have to be a huge win. Like, celebrate every single one because work was put into there. It shows, like, what those little tiny wins add up to and do for a person's, like, mental health. And as far as, like, people see that when you're putting in the work, people see. They may not shout it out all the time. I will. But it, like, you know what I mean? Like, it is seen and it's appreciated. And yeah, it goes so far to see somebody who's willing to put in the work. There's hair hanging from this.
Yeah, there is. So anyways, I was thinking about this just as you were speaking about, there's like this stigma or like self-doubt or whatever you want to call it of like, I, as someone who has schooling, I'm like, oh, I could be doing something that pays more, or like the, those like senses of like, or the self-doubt or whatever you want to call it. This other, I call it my ugly brain. My ugly brain tells me things that I shouldn't listen to.
Right.
I was just wondering, do you ever feel like you get that as someone who has a degree in criminal justice? Do you ever feel like, how do you overcome those feelings or thoughts if you do have them?
I don't really look at it like that. I didn't seek out like this job or this necessarily even field. It kind of found me, I think. Being able to talk with somebody and feel like your words made a difference in their life. I don't, when somebody does have a setback, like until they've quit altogether, it's not a failure, right? It's just a setback. That's what we're talking about, right? So what, now what? Let's go. Let's go. Yep. And I'm really, really comfortable talking to people.
You are. Yeah, you are. If you come into my house and you don't talk to Starkey, you didn't come to my house. Because I think
who are you? What are you doing?
She might be friends. A life to this facility, and it is awesome. I love coming out and hanging out with Starkey, which is why I was super excited to have you on the show.
Yay!
Yes. So we have a question from our mailbox. If you do not know, at Inquire the Fire, you can email us a question about...
Email Ramon, and he will ask his guests your burning questions.
We do have a question.
As long as they are recovery-themed. Yes. Like Starkey, I too am a normie.
Normie? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm part of the normie club that is not a member of the recovery community, but that is a recovery community ally.
Yes.
And so what is the dynamics around not being in recovery yourself, but working at an organization like My House? What is it
about
the recovery community that makes you a recovery community ally? Inquire the Fire at myhousematsu.org.
Inquire the Fire. I think just really understanding that it's a disease, right? It was one of the hardest things for me to learn about, because in my mind it was so preventable, right? But life situations sometimes are not, and it can be genetic. It can be all of these things. And life, nobody knows what they're doing, right? We're all just figuring it out as we go. It's not my place to judge anybody. I am a religious person. I believe that everybody, you know, has purpose. And I do understand. I made a lot of really good friends, like as a kid going to like Alateen and all that good stuff, you know. But it's a family disease. And anybody who says otherwise is out of their mind. And what a family is, you know, it looks differently to many people. And it was a cool community, knowing that I wasn't, like, that there were other kids who were out there, like, who were going through it, like, who were, like, having to lie about X, Y, or Z, or, like, you know. But just, like, good support out there and being able to listen and not judge. And we all have like a really, really good dynamic. Like you guys, you know, talking about the things you would do. And then for Isaac and I to sit and listen, and we're like, but why, you know, like, you know, and it, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. We still are all focused on the same thing. And we all want just good, healthy, productive, you know, young adults to come out of these programs and be successful. And I hope that they are my boss in one way or another one day. Like, that would not bother me one bit. Like, that, I would be so proud.
Yeah. When it comes to like that stigma of what addiction is, I think a lot of people get it confused. Like, I'm a little keyboard warrior on Facebook. Like, I'll see like random reels, I'm like, oh, addiction's a choice, da, da, da. And I can't help myself. I'm sorry. I'm growing. I'm not better. I'm growing.
It is hard. Like, and I feel like I just cut you off, but I'm sorry.
No, you're okay.
But like, so I had a dad who was, you know, an alcoholic and using every drug you can think of. And he was not a good person. And was that because of his addiction? Like, probably. I'll never know because I never knew him sober, right? And then I had a mom who didn't drink or do drugs, gets diagnosed in her, you know, at 45 and dies of cancer. And you're telling me these are both diseases and I'm supposed to think that this is okay and not unfair. Like, you chose to have that drink. Like, you chose to put those drugs in your body. And it's like getting to learn about how it's not a black and white issue like that. Like, that was really, really frustrating for me, but just really good for me to like sit down and be like, listen to other people's story. And that's why it was so important to my mom to have me in therapy at such a young age, you know, like.
A big prompt or encouragement that I would say to our viewers is get to know someone in recovery, hear their stories. Cause like Starkey said, it's not this black or white thing, you know. Like, I think if you look at the world black and white in general, it's going to distort your beliefs and your thinking. So just pursue whatever you're doing with an open mind, because like you said, like a lot of our clients come out of here and they're like, they're making it and they're doing life on life's terms. And it's just such a beautiful thing. Cause it's really easy to just drive past them and be like, oh, sucks for him. Right. Whatever choices he made got him there. But
how many times did it take you? You know what I mean? Like, was it a one and done? You went to rehab and you just never did again? No. Like, yeah, same. Like, so my situation, you know, like I can't even count how many times he went and how many times he was arrested and how many times he was in the paper and all the things. Like, it's not like we're not miracle workers, like, but we're believers in miracles, you know? So like, how can we help? How can we help?
Man. Great question to be asking ourselves. I mean, for me personally, it's just I have to wake up and show up for my clients. I have to work my own recovery so I can help them understand what recovery is, right? I have to, just as simple as show up, listen, talk to them, like treat them. Guess what? They're humans. Treat them as humans. They're not identified by their mistakes or identified by their past decisions, but the decision for them to come into our building, ask for help, shows the resilience and strength that the youth of the Matsu Valley have.
Yeah.
And we're growing like ridiculously fast. Like,
yeah,
I talk about this, everything, like just the recovery community in the Matsu Valley is such a beautiful thing. I've never done much recovery activities outside of the state of Alaska, but I think Alaska has such a beautiful recovery scene, mm-hmm. which is going to bring me into like this spill as if you are someone who struggles with alcohol, drug abuse, there is a community out here that wants nothing but the best for you. And we, as an organization, and other organizations like-minded like us, want to love on you until you can love yourself, and then you can help the next person. And it's just this send it forward act, right? Like, or pay it forward act. That's what we do.
Normies welcome.
Normies welcome.
Woo!
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is a, I don't know how to say it, but there's just this uprising in the Matsu Valley. And if you are someone who is seeking help, please reach out to My House, True North, Set Free. Like, these are all resources at your disposal. And if you are someone who wants to work in the recovery field, if you have a heart for the recovery community, you want to be part of something, like, you are welcome. You are very welcome.
Yeah.
We are growing. We're growing very fast, and it's awesome. But with all that being said, Starkey, I just want to thank you so much for being a guest.
Yeah.
And saying yes. That's the biggest thing we learn in recovery is just say yes. And
I do.
Just say yes, and I will. And
I just said no.
And we said we were doing it anyway.
No, I know. No, I'm talking about drugs. Did they say just say no?
Yeah.
Come on.
Just saying, I thought you were talking about saying no to the podcast.
Never mind. Yes, anyway, podcasts. No yes, drugs.
Yes, podcasts. No drugs. Thank you so much for watching Acquire the Fire. Anyways, have a good one, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Bye.